Welcome to Inspiration and Transformation from the Banks of the Ganga with Sadhvi Bhagwati Saraswati, an American sannyasi living at the Parmarth Nikatan Ashram in Rishikesh, India. Sadhvi is president of the Divine Shakti Foundation, a charitable organization bringing education, vocational training, upliftment, and empowerment programs to women and children. Sadhvi is also Secretary General of the Global Interfaith WASH Alliance and Director of the world-famous International Yoga Festival. Join the musings of an American sannyasi as Sadhvi shares the wisdom and teachings of her guru, His Holiness Pujya Swami Chidanand Saraswatiji.
Welcome, everyone, to Inspiration and Transformation from the Holy Banks of the sacred Ganga River in the land of Rishikesh, India. So, a lot of people tragically think that giving in and giving up are synonymous with this spiritual virtue of surrender, of peace. Spirituality never says, thou shalt be a doormat. Spirituality doesn't say, become a slave to whoever it may be who wants to dominate you. Spirituality doesn't say, give up your freedom into another's ignorance or another's illusion or another's agenda or another's ego. Spirituality does talk about choosing peace and choosing love in every moment. But remember that that includes you. And so a lot of times when we think we're choosing love, we forget that we're supposed to also be choosing love for ourselves. When we think about choosing peace, we're supposed to be choosing peace for ourself as well, not just for the person who's trying to dominate me or fight with me. And so, if you're being dominated, and especially if you're being dominated into doing things that you know are not right, not in alignment with your dharma, not in alignment with spiritual truths, not in alignment with the higher purpose and meaning, not in alignment with the tenets, the virtues of spirituality. By going along with that, you're actually creating more conflict. Maybe not in the moment, but that's just a very, very superficial way of looking at it, because what you're saying is to avoid conflict in this exact time and space, this intersection of time and space, I'm going to allow the seeds of adharma, unrighteousness, to be planted, to sprout, to blossom. Picking up, uprooting a little sprout or a seed is much less violent than trying to uproot a tree. So, yeah, it disturbs the soil a little bit, but a lot less than trying to uproot a tree. And so if you're being dominated and pushed into acting in ways in which the roots of that tree are actually suffocating your heart and your spiritual awakening, enlightenment, opening, well, at some point you're going to have to uproot that. And once it becomes a tree, it's a lot more difficult and a lot more violent to uproot. So saying no is just as important as saying yes. Spirituality does not mean thou shalt always say yes. There's things sometimes we have to say no to. we say no to acting in ways, living in ways that are out of alignment with our truth, with Dharma, with our core spiritual beliefs, that are out of alignment with ahimsa, satya, right? You look at the yam and the niyam of a yoga practice. Anything out of alignment with those is something we need to learn to say no to. And anything that infringes upon your freedom, we need to say no. And it's also important to realize that that doesn't mean we have to change people. Somebody may still want you to act a certain way, to be a certain way, to think a certain way, to believe a certain way. And that act of simply wanting is not something that is forcing you. A lot of times we say, oh, I had to do it. This person wanted me to. Or I had to do it because if not, that person would get angry. We don't have to do things. What we have to do is live our truth, live our Dharma, live in connection to God, but also be wary of our ego. Because a lot of times, it's very easy for the ego to play as the one with your highest interest at heart. The ego is the one who says, for example, oh, your parents are taking away your freedom by making you go to school. You shouldn't have to go to school. School is just forcing you to do things you don't want to do. Now, if every kid went along with what their desire said, we'd have a population of kids roaming the streets rather than getting an education. If people say, oh, you know, my boss is really infringing upon my freedom by forcing me to sit at my desk all day and do this work. Well, the boss has hired you to do that. And assuming that you're not working in a sweatshop, that you're not bonded labor, that you don't have working conditions that violate your human rights, assuming that you're free to get up and leave, recognize that your freedom is also not a license to do whatever you want, whenever you want, and to have everyone else just kind of go along with it. That your parents should say, oh, no problem, honey, you don't have to go to school. That your boss should say, oh, no problem, you don't want to do that? That's okay, I'll pay you anyway. Take the whole week off, go to the beach, no problem, on me. There are systems that we have to follow. We stop at red lights, even if there's no one around. Because if we don't, it ends up leading to more damage later on. And that's an important thing to realize, because a lot of people feel very oppressed by systems of school, their workplace, the laws that we have, and would love to be able to justify anarchy in the name of freedom. And that's where it's really important to realize that freedom is not a license to decadence or recklessness. The freedom we talk about is a freedom internally to live your Dharma, to have the spiritual awakening experience of knowing the truth of who you are, and externally, to be able to live according to your morals, your values, your spiritual tenets, assuming, of course, they don't violate someone else. But recognize that you then also have to be prepared for the consequences. So if you say, for example, I don't want to do this, you have to be prepared for whoever you're saying that to then say, okay, but then I'm not going to have you as my employee anymore. Or, okay then, but maybe I don't want to be married to you anymore. And assuming that what they were asking you to do is not a violation of who you are, a violation of your human rights, they also have that freedom to respond to you in their freedom. And that's where it's really, really important to recognize what our freedom means. So if you're trying to simply avoid conflict by doing things that are not what you want, that are not in your highest spiritual calling, don't do them. But then have the courage to face whatever the repercussions are. It's not always easy. Taking steps away from what people around us want to do, it's not always easy. But it's the path to living your truest, highest life. I had almost no one who thought it was a good idea for me to leave America and come to India. But I knew it was my highest calling. But it took courage. And so same thing in your life. If you know that something is your dharma, it may be difficult to live it. It may create a little bit of conflict. But that's worth it, because later on, you don't have to uproot a whole tree in order to actually live the truth of who you are. And lastly, realize also that sometimes creating a little bit of conflict for our loved ones actually isn't such a bad thing. Because sometimes that actually pushes them into a deeper level of awareness, a deeper level of having to look at themselves. When they realize they can't dominate you all the time, when they realize that you're not just going to live dancing according to their tune, fulfilling their agenda. If they are open and if they are courageous, they will look deeply inside. Your freedom will become a mirror in their face for their own freedom. And so in that way, even though it may be difficult, it's actually a great service to them. Your courage will lead to them finding the courage within themselves.
You're listening to OTRFM, part of the IOM Radio Network.
Being a radio host on IOM FM allows you to build your show on a rich platform with the power of the internet to fulfill your outreach goals and connect with a very specialized and global online audience, unlimited by time and distance. OM Times Radio will provide you with web relevance, a recognizable conscious brand, and with the standard of excellence that has accompanied every single...
Circle of Hearts Radio is a sanctuary on the airwaves. Join me, Grandmother Aliyah, in the circle on Sunday, 2 p.m. Eastern, as I share information to both enlighten and nourish your soul.
Hi, this is Christina Ricci with RAIN. Every 2 minutes, another American is sexually assaulted. If you or someone you know has been sexually assaulted, you are not alone. Help is just a call or click away through the National Sexual Assault Hotline. Please call 1-800-656-HOPE, that's H-O-P-E, or visit rain.org, that's RAINN.ORG.
Brought to you by RAIN and this station.
Welcome back to Inspiration and Transformation. I'm so glad to have you all back here with me. To be aware of Atma in every transaction, meaning every minute, every moment, Because of course you don't want to be aware of Atma only in transactions. You want to be aware of Atma in every breath, every minute, every moment. And we become aware by recognizing that that Atma is the core of who I am. So I'm the one who is walking. I'm the one eating. I'm the one drinking. I'm the one working. Who is that I? Most of us are aware of the I in every moment, but we're aware of it physically. So, oh, this bubble bath feels really good on my physical body. This yummy meal feels really good. This hot cup of tea on a cold day or cold drink on a hot day feels really good. Or we're aware of the I on a mental level, an emotional level. How dare you look at me like that? That doesn't feel good. Don't be mean to me. Or, oh, that feels so good. She was so nice to me. So we actually are aware of I in almost every moment. But we're just aware of a much more shallow form of I than the deep form of I. And so being aware of Atma in every moment simply means dropping down into a deeper awareness of who I am. And that's where our meditative practice is so important, because if I don't have the awareness of I as Atma, as pure consciousness in my meditation, I'm not going to be able to bring it into every moment. I only bring it into every moment when I have it in the meditation. And then I bring my meditation and my meditative awareness into every moment. So as you meditate, make sure to have that awareness of who am I in your meditation. Make sure to have that practice of neti neti in the meditation, not this, not that, not the body, not the mind, not the emotions. When you have that awareness, it stays with you, then into every moment. And it means staying conscious, really conscious in every moment. This is where practices of mindfulness come in. We learn to walk mindfully, to eat mindfully, to chew mindfully, to drink water mindfully. Everything we do to bring full awareness, full consciousness to it. Because when I'm fully aware and conscious, I know I'm not the body. I'm not this hand that is moving up and down. My brain is making the hand move up and down. But I'm also not the brain, because the brain keeps changing. And so in every moment, I have that opportunity to become aware of what I'm not, and therefore what I am. And there's a beautiful practice that I love. It's a practice I use personally, where in every moment, allow yourself, in addition to whatever your mantra may be, your guru mantra may be. I have another mantra in addition to the guru mantra. And that mantra is not self. It's just very simple. Not self. Not self. And it's easiest to do in moments of either the extremes of emotions. So great joy to remember in those moments, not self. Meaning whatever it is that I'm super happy about, something worked out really well. Even in that moment of great satisfaction, to remember not self. Or a moment of having and really enjoying a beautiful meal, to remember not self. Having a cool, beautiful shower on a hot day, the body goes, ah, but to remember, not self. And in the same way, on the emotional side, someone says something that feels really good, you get lots of praises, to remember, not self. And then you remember it on the negative side as well. Something happens. You feel disappointed, dejected, failure. To remember, not self. Something feels physically not so good to the body. Itchy mosquito bite. Pain in the leg or the back. Remember. Not self. And then similarly, with the emotion, someone says something that hurts, something happens that hurts, you remember, not self. And as you remember what you're not, it automatically takes you back into what you are. So you could do it either way. For me, I like the practice of not self. But you could do it the other way. You could also say, Atma is self. You could say, Aham Brahmasmi. You could say, Soham. You could say whatever works for you to remind you, I am soul. I am spirit. I am love. I am consciousness. What matters? Is keep remembering, keep doing it, and slowly, 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 that too will become a mantra in your mind. Not self, not self, and Aham Brahmasmi. So you'll remember that which you are not and that which you are.
This is OTRFM, part of the iOM radio network.
OM Times Magazine is one of the leading online content providers of positivity, wellness, and personal empowerment. A philanthropic organization, their net proceeds are funneled to support worldwide charity initiatives via Humanity Healing International. Through their commitment to creating community and providing conscious content, they aspire to uplift humanity on a global scale. OM Times. Co-creating a more conscious lifestyle.
Do you have time to read that inspiring book or that blog post you've been meaning to get to? In your busy world, how do you improve yourself and keep your life going? I'm Lisa Kay, and my Between Heaven and Earth radio show can transform your life just by listening. Be uplifted with inspiring topics, positive stories, and ideas that really work. Between Heaven and Earth Radio is conscious living for your soul, every Wednesday at 4 p.m. Eastern Time.
Like Baldwin with People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals. I grew up loving circuses and other traveling animal shows, but it never occurred to me what life might be like for the animals. Training wild animals to do things they don't understand takes force. Routine discipline with a hook or whip with the heel of a boot shows the animal exactly who's the boss. Don't patronize animal acts. Please contact People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals.
757-622-PETA.
Welcome back. This is Sadhvi Bhagavati Saraswati with inspiration and transformation. I've been hearing a lot about spiritual bypassing. I can't seem to understand it, Because to think that we can bypass any spiritual developmental milestones is an illusion. What is spiritual bypassing? So, spiritual bypassing is a term that refers to the process through which, due to very deep, very beautiful, very profound, very real spiritual experiences, we think that we are done. For most of us, we have many different processes going on. There is, of course, the deepest spiritual process, the core of who we are, our Dharma, that unfolding of the truth of who we are, that opening of who we are, that waking up of who we are. That's the corest, the deepest process and level. But most of us also have levels of mental process. And I say most of us, it could almost be all of us, but there are a few who, having come into an enlightened family, coming into a truly beyond unique exception, managed to be born and raised in a family, in a situation where every minute of the day they are simply seen in the fullness of themselves as divine beings, where the people around them see each other as divine beings, where that nature within them is cultivated, groomed, watered from the time they're born. Children who never in any way end up experiencing the repercussions of a parent's stress or a parent's tension or a parent's confusion or anger. So you can see as I'm telling this, it sounds very much like a fairy tale situation. So most of us do have these mental processes, but I know there are occasionally situations. So for that, we say most of us. The mental process is a process in which during our childhoods, during our time of ego development, during our time as we grow and we understand who we are in the world, we end up developing what we call sanskaras or personalities or identities or complexes or neuroses or issues. I mean, there's so many different words that dance around the same process, which is basically the nonsense in my mind. It's basically the stuff in my mind that isn't working for my own awakening, that isn't working for my own enlightenment, that isn't leading me toward a capital T truth, but rather that says things like, oh my God, you're so stupid, or, that person's really ugly, or you're not good enough for this, or that person isn't good enough for that. Whether it's judgment of the self, judgment of others, that mental process is that which holds us back in a lot of ways. It's what keeps us stuck. It's what keeps us stuck in relationships. Relationships with each other, relationships with ourselves. It's that which keeps us from being able to live in complete love, complete oneness, complete union, complete openness with those around us. It's that which makes us feel frustrated, jealous, angry, competitive, worried about scarcity, lack, not enough. It's a mental process. Now, what happens a lot of times is those of us in the midst of so many interweaving mental processes, so many different complexes and ego games and sanskaras and neuroses and whatnot, have a very real, very powerful spiritual experience. Maybe it happens suddenly by grace. Maybe it happens because we've started meditating. Maybe it happens because we've started going to devotional chanting, to kirtan. Maybe it happens in one of so many other ways. The experience is real. It's an experience of, oh my God, I am one with the universe. I am one with God. I am perfect. Everything is perfect. I understand it all. And it's real. And it's beautiful. And in almost every case, it has not obliterated, undone my ego processes, my jealousy, my expectation, my neuroses, my issues. What it has done is shown me the possibility of where to go. It's shown me the truth. But I don't necessarily have an easy time living that truth every moment. And spiritual bypassing means that once I've had that spiritual experience, I decide, oh, I'm done. I'm enlightened. I'm awakened. I'm done. Therefore, any further anger, ego, neurosis, jealousy, greed, lust, ignorance, whatever I may be swimming in, well, it's not my problem. It must be your problem because I am enlightened. I am awake. And this becomes a very, very dangerous trap. Because where before the spiritual experience, we at least were aware that, yeah, I've got a lot of work to do. After the spiritual experience, this sense of sort of spiritual arrogance comes in. And then every time I have a moment of anger, pain, greed, lust, not enoughness, sadness, whatever it may be, instead of looking at that, instead of being present with that, I simply try to hook into, oh, that beautiful experience I had. I'm enlightened, I'm awakened, this isn't my reality. And this is where you get all of these fantastic and ever so true, poignant and very funny comments like, oh, you think you're enlightened? Go spend 2 weeks with your parents and then let us know. Because those are the sorts of situations that tend to make most people realize not how unreal their spiritual experience was, but how much work there still is left to do to actually be able to live that every minute and every moment. And so spiritual bypassing is when I pretend that that doesn't exist. I pretend that my spiritual experience has fixed everything. And so if you have a problem with me, well, it must be your problem because I'm done. On a personal level, I remember I had been here maybe 6 months, maybe 9 months, a long time. When you're having the type of spiritual experiences that I was having every day, every hour of every day almost, of just such ecstasy, such complete immersion in God, in divinity, in ecstasy, tears pouring down the face, ecstasy. And about 6-9 months into it, something happened. And I went to Pooja Swamiji. And I went to him with my reaction to what had happened. And he looked at me and he said, "You are the stupidest smart person I've ever met." And it was like this incredible slap in the face. He didn't have to actually pick up a hand and touch the cheek. That would have just hit the cheek. The words hit so deeply. But it was a slap not to injure. It was a slap to awaken. Because it was a slap of the ego that made me realize, oh yeah, all of these incredible experiences I've had, yes, so real, so true, so full, so complete, and yes, I still had 25 years worth of sanskaras, worth of neuronal patterns and networks that were still at play and that still could be triggered sometimes by something that someone said or did and that could still thrust me into an identity that wasn't all love, all truth, all divinity, but that was a conditioned identity, a sanskara, a habit from the past. And it was, while it was obviously very painful to the ego at the moment, that's the great role of what the gurus do, is instead of allowing you to just slip into ignorant, not bliss, it's not bliss, because without truth there can't be bliss, but without letting you slip into ignorant comatoseness, they wake you up. And they metaphorically, Pooja Swamiji's guru used to actually slap him, he just metaphorically awakens that ego with that psychic slap of the ego to realize, hey, wait, there's still work to do. There's still patterns that need to heal. There's still patterns that need to be looked at. And that's a beautiful process, by the way. And this is why whenever people ask me about the intersection of psychology and spirituality or different, you know, psychological patterns we have, I always say this is exciting work because it shows you the very unique inner workings of your psyche. On a spiritual level, we are one. Consciousness, awareness, soul, spirit, it is the same. There's nothing unique about soul. Soul just is. But each of our interactions with soul, each of our interactions with truth, interactions with spirit, interactions with consciousness, interactions with love, are colored and shaped by our own sanskaras, by our own egos, by our own minds that have been conditioned in our lives. And that's where the psychological work is so beautiful, to be able to look in and finally realize, oh, wow, yeah, now I get it. Now I know why that silly thing bothers me so much. Now I know why this. It's not the other person. It's me. And again, not with any guilt or judgment or criticism. Just with pure awareness of, oh yeah, there's that pattern. It's like You know, I injured my knee about 4 or 5 years ago, and it's pretty much healed, 99% healed. But every once in a while, I do something, and, you know, I bend down too quickly, or I stand up too quickly or something, and then I remember, oh, yeah, that knee. Not with judgment, not with criticism, just awareness. Oh, yeah, the knee. And in the same way, we recognize these patterns we have just with that. Oh, yeah, that sanskara. Oh, yeah, that pattern. Oh, yeah, that history. Not to do that, to deny that, to pretend that doesn't exist, to move through the world with the I am perfect, everyone else is the problem. I am enlightened, I am awake. If you have a problem with me, it is your problem. You must be the one in ego. That's spiritual bypass. To believe that I am somehow free of patterns, of sanskaras, of ego, simply because I've been graced with an extraordinary, exquisite, ecstatic spiritual experience. That's spiritual bypass. So you see it. You see it a lot in the spiritual world. It's the non-functioning people in spiritual communities. It's the, yes, I meditate. Yes, I, you know, do sadhana. Oh, yes, I've had these beautiful spiritual experiences. But don't come near me because you're going to ruin my peace. Don't say that, it ruins my peace. Don't ask me to do this, it ruins my peace. Don't look at me like that, it ruins my peace. Do whatever I say because I'm the enlightened one. And you see that? Oh, I don't need to do that, I'm enlightened. You sadly see this a lot. And so that's where the term comes from. And it's a beautiful reminder of the beauty of our own psyches, the beauty of our own unique makeup, not as something to get stuck in, not as something to identify with, not as something to take over our lives with, processing it, drowning in it, rehearsing it, rehashing it, over and over and over again, such that we literally just live in the past. But simply to be aware of it. And wherever there's blockages, wherever there's stuckness, wherever there's darkness, to be able to look at it courageously, vulnerably, to acknowledge it, and to help it heal in whatever way in our individual processes we work with ourselves.
This is OTRFM, part of the IOM radio network.
OM Times Magazine is one of the leading online content providers of positivity, wellness, and personal empowerment. A philanthropic organization, their net proceeds are funneled to support worldwide charity initiatives via Humanity Healing International. Through their commitment to creating community and providing conscious content, they aspire to uplift humanity on a global scale. OM Times, co-creating a more conscious lifestyle.
Do you have time to read that inspiring book or that blog post you've been meaning to get to? In your busy world, how do you improve yourself and keep your life going? I'm Lisa Kay, and my Between Heaven and Earth radio show can transform your life just by listening. Be uplifted with inspiring topics, positive stories, and ideas that really work. Between Heaven and Earth radio is conscious living for your soul every Wednesday at 4 p.m. Eastern Time.
Like Baldwin, with People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals. I grew up loving circuses and other traveling animal shows, but it never occurred to me what life might be like for the animals. Training wild animals to do things they don't understand takes force. Routine discipline with a hook or whip, with the heel of a boot, shows the animal exactly who's the boss. don't patronize animal acts. Please contact People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals.
757-622-PETA.
Welcome back. This is Sadhvi Bhagavati Saraswati with Inspiration and Transformation. So, Jivatma is, you can think of it as my individual soul. So the, we'll come back to a metaphor, but for the moment, Jivatma is my soul. The soul that is interacting with my very physical life. The soul that chose to take birth in my physical body, in the circumstances in which I was raised, the country, the culture, the situation, the condition, that chose to come into this particular package, that intersects and interacts with my karmic package. Paramatma is the whole soul, the infinite, the supreme soul. Now the truth is, they're actually one. A way to think about it is the water of the ocean. So we have an ocean. Imagine that the ocean is infinite, that there aren't borders or boundaries to it. The ocean is infinite. The sun is shining upon it. Some droplets of water evaporate due to the heat of the sun. They get carried by the wind, deposited somewhere. Those drops return back to the ocean. All water on the planet is heading back to the ocean. Now, each of those individual drops at the core is ocean, wherever it lands. It's ocean. And it's a drop until it reunites with the ocean, at which point there's no longer a drop. It's not about the drop dying or being finished or over, but it's about when that drop unites with the ocean, the individual dropness merges into the infinite ocean. And so the Jivatma is like the drop. It's part of the ocean. It's of the ocean. It's never stopped being ocean. But at this current intersection of time and space, on a particular plane of existence, because of course on another plane of existence, there is nothing but soul. There is nothing but God. Everything else is an illusion. But on this other plane of existence, on this other plane of existence where we look at form, the waves of the ocean, the drops of the ocean, on this plane of existence, this drop is currently in the form of this body. It's still ocean. Hasn't stopped being ocean. It's returning to the ocean as well. And at some point, it's going to merge back fully into the ocean. At which point, it's not about a dying of this. It's about a merging into the one. And this, by the way, does not have to happen only after we die. We speak about Jivatma. We also speak about Jiva Mukti. Awakening. Mukti, freedom, moksha. while we are living in this very form, in this very intersection of time and space, on this very plane of existence, we can be free. So it's not about I have to lose the physical body in order to merge with the one. Because it's not the physical body that keeps me from merging with it. It's the mind. And so when the mind, this is why we meditate, it's why we pray, it's why we do seva, it's why we engage in all of these practices that purify the mind, purify the vision, purify the understanding. So that even with this body, I can be Jiva Mukti. Which means instead of identifying only as Jivatma, only as my particular karmic package, moving through this particular physical body and circumstances, I actually am able to experience oneness with Paramatma. Because the truth is, we speak about souls, plural. And on one plane of existence, as I said, yeah, that exists. But on the highest plane of existence, there's only soul. It's like in the ocean, there are waves. And on the most superficial level, on the surface, yeah, there are waves. But on the deepest, highest level, there's nothing but ocean. And yeah, some of the ocean may be in the form of the wave. But even the wave in its form as a wave is still ocean. It doesn't stop being ocean in order to become a wave. It doesn't stop being ocean in order to be a drop. And so even as we live as the Jivatma, when that Jivatma interacting and intersecting with my mind, my understanding, my buddhi, my ahankara, my ego, when that is purified, I understand that even as Jivatma, ultimately my highest truth is Paramatma. One with the divine. When we say aham brahmasmi, that's the awareness. When we say soham, that's the awareness. Then it's no longer about jivatma, paramatma, then it's just atma, soul, divinity. One. And that can happen. That's the Jiva Mukti. So as the mind is purified, the Jivatma realizes it's Paramatma. This brings to a close this hour of inspiration and transformation. Thank you so much for joining me. I'm so glad to be together with you all each week, and I look forward to being together again next Thursday, same time, on Om Times Radio.